This podcast is brought to you by Labyrinth Marketing,
an award-winning strategic marketing and capability consultancy passionate about step-changing the growth of brands and agencies by setting long-term strategy and supporting and empowering the people behind the brands and business to bring these plans to life through capability programs, training, coaching, mentoring, and providing extra resource.
Hello and welcome to The Whole Marketer. Today's podcast is a technical skill. It's long-term strategy. And shortly, we'll be joined by our guest, Eleanor Winton. But before we do, let me tell you why I believe long-term strategy to be so important. It provides us with the clarity internally with our direction and vision, and externally, the clarity around what we offer and what we stand for. Having this clarity provides motivation for our employees. It allows us to focus our efforts, ensuring that we're investing the right time and money on what will have the greatest impact and commercial return. And taking the time to write a long-term strategy, looking out to the marketplace and identifying opportunities for which we can grow, means that we are more likely to step change our growth and have proactive growth as opposed to reactive, initiative movement. Today's guest is Eleanor Winton, who founded Foresightly in 2017, building on her passion to inspire leaders and leadership teams to imagine a better future for all their stakeholders. Through her consultancy, she works with organisations all over the world, helping them to imagine what the future holds for their business and to develop innovative strategies to grow value in that new context. This year, she co-authored the Disruption Game Plan, New Rules for Connecting Thinking on Innovation and Risk. Eleanor, welcome to the Whole Marketer podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
As always, we start with a big juicy question. And today's big juicy question is, what is long-term strategy, or to use your terminology, game plan, to you?
Okay, so I'm going to sort of break it down a little bit. The first thing I'm going to just tackle is long term, because I think we all have very different definitions of what that is. And then I'm going to talk about strategy, and then I'll come back to this idea of a game plan in the context of all of that. So maybe the place to start is to think about long term. So actually, maybe can I ask you, Abby, what number of years would you put on long term? Just instinctively.
I think 3 to 5 years when I think long term. But for me, whether it's 3 or whether it's 5 or 10, if you're pharma, mm-hmm, or something mm-hmm. that's kind of got a longer pipeline or R&D patent type cycle to it, I would say it's dependent on the sector in which you operate and the pace in which it changes, but at least 3 years.
Yeah, 100%. And I agree with all of that. It's interesting, though, isn't it, that, you know, I meet lots and lots of clients for whom the kind of structures that they have around future thinking only really go as far as maybe 18 months. Mm. And that's really where some of the breakdown comes with long term thinking. So, you know, one of the challenges with being a sort of futurist is that often the insights that you want to bring that are really very long term, so 20, 30, 40 years into the future, feel so disconnected that people don't feel able to act on them. Then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got information that's too close that actually feels like it's too late to do anything about it. So with long term, I think I always try to pitch it around the 5-year mark, probably. That's where you want to be aiming at. Although when you're thinking about 5 years, which is long term for your business, you also need to incorporate information which covers a much larger spectrum. And that's probably a slightly confusing answer, but let me just bring it to life for you. So you're thinking about a pharmaceutical, for example. So you're thinking about long-term cycles, you're thinking about health, you're thinking about population, all of those things. So as a pharmaceutical planning the long-term strategy for a particular drug, you know, 5 years is probably not the right time frame to look, but let's say you need to show results within a 5-year time frame. That's probably quite sensible. Nonetheless, you're going to have to look at the global population picture, for example, out to 2050 or similar, because what you've got to demonstrate is that, yes, you can get a return within that time, but is there going to be a need long term for this thing? What's driving it? What are the health implications and so on? Then the other thing, of course, that you'd have to consider is not just health related stuff, but other things that impact health. So take a broad view of it. So I think long term is a small way to describe something that actually requires very, very deep thought. And I guess the challenge I would give is most organizations don't do it, put simply, or they do it purely around a plan rather than around the influences that might impact that plan. And so that's the difference, I guess, between a game plan and maybe traditionally thinking about strategy. So a lot of businesses, in terms of how they think about strategy, are really just talking about their plan, what they want to achieve over a period of time. It's sort of a projection of what you want to get to. A game plan is something that says, yeah, let's think about the future that we want to build, not just the one that we expect to happen. But a game plan really incorporates all of those things that along the journey might knock you off course or might facilitate you in achieving your objectives. So it's a much broader way of looking at the future. And it's also something around which we recognise it has to constantly change. So you don't just look long term, create a strategy and drive out towards it. And then in 5 years' time, think, did we get there? Did anything knock us off course? Because that, in a very uncertain environment, is a really dangerous approach. A game plan says, let's look out to what we think is likely to happen in the future, a range of possible futures. Let's chart a path to get there. And then let's continue to review and adjust and adapt our game plan on the way to our goals.
So what's great about that is that we're aligned. We're aligned that a long-term strategy is looking at where you want to take that brand and business at least the 3 years, if not the 5 years, if not the 10 years, so that we're elevating and step changing the growth of those brands or businesses by looking at a more aspirational yet realistic place that we're taking it, as opposed to iterative little changes hanging out in the here and now.
Absolutely. And it's also the context point, isn't it? You have to consider your own plan in the context of everything else that's going on, your competitors and all of that stuff. And that's what will insulate you against some of those big peripheral risks. But it's also what helps you to identify some opportunities as they emerge that you might otherwise have a blind spot around.
Yeah, completely. You know, the goal stays the same, but the plan changes.
Absolutely.
So many marketeers listen to this and probably thinking either their long-term strat planning cycles are coming up, and they're probably sat here thinking, you know, I faced a great deal of disruption in the last 18 months, 2 years as a result of the pandemic, both personally and professionally. We did a survey at the beginning of the lockdown and then we did it a year on. And we were asking teams whether they're carrying on with the long-term strat plans that they had in place, whether they were going to continue to develop new strat plans or whether they were going to focus on just in their in-year execution. And what we found is that even a year on, many were sat here kind of still nervous about taking that step to look back out to the future because they were very much dealing with the here and now and delivering their annual plans. Although there are many that are now going, okay, this is continuing. We've run the scenarios. We've got a greater understanding where we are, even if it is behind where we were historically.
Mm-hmm.
Now we want to look to the future.
Yep.
What would be your advice to those about to start this process in this post-COVID world to look and define their long-term view, perhaps again or maybe new?
So I think the first thing I would recommend is just carefully consider what your mindset is in this moment. Be really conscious of it, because exactly as you say, Abby, you know, when this sort of shock hit, we went into a very kind of value protecting mindset. Most businesses did. That was a necessary thing because, you know, this is such an extreme shock. We had to kind of, businesses had to stay afloat and we had to manage. But the problem with that value protect mindset as you look forward is that it limits your view. So I think it's really important at this point to, for those businesses who did go through that really kind of stressful, internally focused, sort of head down kind of 18 months and are now trying to flip out, you probably need to get some help to take you out of that mindset. You certainly need to consider all of the huge range of new stimulus that you probably have missed in the last 18 months. And by stimulus, I mean information that is going to give you that really broad perspective of what the future might hold. In general, you know, as humans, we are very, very, very good at predicting stuff that has just happened. We're not very good at predicting at all, actually. And there are all sorts of problems around that sort of risk mindset. And maybe if I can give this example, and some of the people listening may have heard of this one before, but you know, if you think at the beginning of the pandemic, we saw some very strange behaviours. So we saw, you know, the very, very wealthy buying up bunkers to secure their families away from the risk of pandemic. And then, of course, the risk of climate change further on. Now, that seems like a pretty edge behaviour. But actually, what we're starting to see is that thinking making its way into the mainstream. So a company in Miami at the moment, a developer, which is developing skyscrapers, which are what it describes as pandemic ready. So they have their own healthcare facilities built in. No doubt you can kind of bar the doors and stop us from entering the building. You know, so that's a very risk-based future, oh, there's just been a pandemic, there'll probably be another one, people are definitely going to buy this, you know. But of course, what that doesn't consider is, first of all, there are a huge range of other risks that may come into play. There may not be another pandemic for 20 or 30 years. There probably will be one, but you know, maybe not for a long time. But also, what that stops us from doing is seeing what the opportunity is to actually avoid it happening again, which is a more helpful place to be. So, you know, for, as a business, if you've spent the last 18 months thinking about how to protect value in your business, how to protect jobs, how to protect your market, it can be very hard to flip into that grow value mindset. So get some new information, get some help to do that, I think. And then I think the other thing I would say is, you know, looking to the future is, it's something that for many, many years in business has been sort of undervalued as a skill. And there are lots of kind of methodologies and tools and so on that sit behind it. And actually, I think this is a great point for someone in your team or in your organization to get upskilled in some of that stuff, even at the most basic level. So some of the frameworks that are used for scenario planning, for example, are really, really helpful in the business world day to day. So, yeah, I think it's time to explore what new information you need, what new skills you need, and then to think about that question of buy-in. You know, how much risk do we want to take? You know, so what are we prepared to chance to achieve something bigger and better than what we might have previously imagined? You know, all of these conversations need to be happening now.
So in your book, Eleanor, funnily enough, you talk about risk. And for those that are listening, Eleanor's book is The Disruption Game Plan. And in this book, you talk about the need to face into the behaviours a business needs to adopt to truly disrupt. The balance between being innovative, but also how risk needs to be reframed in order for the business to be able to truly disrupt. Can you tell me more about those innovative behaviours?
Yeah, absolutely. And so let me just explain a wee bit more that kind of relationship between innovation and risk and disruption, first of all. So, you know, what we tend to do in business is we think in quite a siloed way. There's a very good reason for that. That's because we exist in large organisations where it's much more efficient to take decisions in silos than it is to constantly, to every time we have to make a decision, to have to engage absolutely everyone. So there's a really, really good reason why businesses are organised in that way. But what unfortunately that can mean is that when we're in a really disrupted environment, it's either the risk or the innovation part of the business that considers that, or they consider it separately at the same time, and then they produce competing responses to that environment. So it's really, really important to think about not just being disrupted or being a disruptor, but doing both of those things across the course of your game plan, potentially flipping into different mindsets. And so to your question, Abby, the behaviours, you know, that we really need to employ, whether, you know, whatever part of the business that we're in, the key one really is curiosity. So we've got to be thinking, what could disrupt us, or how could we disrupt? What's changing? What's new? What are some of the challenges? So we need to be constantly asking questions about the way that things are done, because for the most part, disruptors really go after the assumptions of an industry, or an assumption that might have been in place for many, many years, you know. And I'm sure lots of people will have heard me tell the story about the whiskey element, which is this, you know, alternative way of making vintage or aged whiskey really, really quickly and really, really cheaply. And what that goes after is the fundamental assumption of the industry. So we need to be constantly curious. There are a few other things we need to be. So we need to be humble about our own position in the world, you know, so we need to be ambitious about what we're trying to achieve, but also humble in the sense that we understand that we don't have all the answers to some of the many challenges that we face. So we might need to start to think differently about what some of those look like. And then, of course, we're going to need to experiment a bit around the responses. So we need to be prepared to get things wrong and to be a bit imperfect. So we've got to be curious, be humble, be imperfect. All of those things are actually things that are fundamental to leadership. So really, I think, you know, if you're in a leadership position and you're concerned about failure or any of those things, this is the time when we need to realize that actually, as leaders, we need to lead the charge on experimentation and failure, because otherwise we're just not going to get to solve any of the problems that we're facing into. And we're also not going to get to where we need to get to. You know, we need to start to have a much more experimental approach to what we're doing in a really disrupted environment. And then I guess, first of all, we need to keep us going is actually energy, you know. So we're facing into a really difficult environment. We've come through a time that's been probably very draining. Lots of you listening to this are probably thinking, you know, I'm knackered, and now you're asking me to look forward. And
that's exactly the feedback I've had. It's, you know, I'm tired. I've not had time to fill up my cup. Yeah. I'm exhausted, and now I've got to put the energy into the most important thing we do as marketers.
Exactly. And, you know, it's not easy, but there's some really interesting kind of research coming out from multiple sources now about our relationship with work and how that's changed. And, you know, that continual blurring of the boundaries between work life and private life. And, you know, that stuff does worry me a bit for the point that we're just talking about, which is actually exactly as you say, you know, when do you actually get a chance to recharge? How do you carve that time out? How do you give yourself just a little bit of a mental break from all the challenges that all of this stuff presents? Because this is a stressful time, you know, we've got kind of 8 years to save the planet, you know, and that's looking like it's going to be harder and harder and harder. And, you know, COP26, we all hope this week that some great things will be agreed, but I think we have to be realistic about the failure of politics to address a lot of this stuff. So I think, you know, and I know that you talk about this as well, Abby, but one of the things that's really important, if you're going to be energized, which I think is critical, is that you understand what gives you energy and that you're really, really brutally firm about carving out that time for yourself, because otherwise we're just not going to get to where we want to get to, and we're not going to be able to give that challenge that we need to give, and we're not going to be able to be creative and innovative and all of those things if we don't feel energized. And so we say in the Disruption Game Plan, you know, that one of the behaviors is to actually be a leader, and it seems like an obvious thing to say, but I think that relates to all of those behaviors that we've talked about already, which is that, you know, leaders need to take risks, you know, leaders need to push hard and challenge on behalf of others, you know, they need to be prepared to try new things, but also to understand that they don't have the answers all the time, you know, and that's very different from perhaps what we valued in leaders previously. So it's not an easy set of behaviours to embed, but I think it's just hopefully just provocation for people to think, you know, how often am I living each of those? How might I change and improve or increase how often I'm using those behaviours or how I'm employing them?
Those five behaviours are curiosity, being humble, being imperfect, energized, and a leader. And I think this is why we're so aligned, isn't it, Eleanor? Because, you know, these are the soft skills that I also have listed in the book. So curiosity, being authentic, being vulnerable, as well as being a leader and really taking ownership of the commitment of where you're taking your brand or your business and putting the energy and aspiration and inspiration into leading that team. Yeah. And the last bit, being energized, you know, what are you going to do to fill up your cup personally? But also, what are you going to do for the marketers in your care to help them fill their cup up or give them the headspace and time to do that before you go into that process? Mm-hmm. Going into this after a really stressful quarter, or going into this after a really stressful board meeting that you've got to have, is not the right mindset. It's not the right energy levels, but you'd be surprised about how many people do that. And, you know, even just small behaviours that I see is arriving for a workshop stressed because of the meeting that they've just had before. Their phone's not turned off. They're not fully engaged. They haven't really put their R&R into the night before. They might have gone out.
Yep.
And here they are, about to set the future. You know, small things make a big difference. You know, it's really the most important thing we do as marketers all year, to set that long-term strategic direction, the goals, the vision of where we're taking the brand and business. As you say, to put the energy into thinking differently, the right mindset, and really looking at how we can run those scenarios and really understand the competitive context, not just what's happening now, but what might happen in the duration of the time of the plan and beyond, and the scenarios that might play out in that time.
Yeah, and I hope this might help to take the pressure off. So if people are listening to this thinking, oh my God, this sounds like a really huge and difficult job, the thing I would kind of sort of reverse back to is to say, look, take the pressure off yourself. This is not about asking you to solve the problem, predict the future, and come up with the exact and perfect plan. It's really not about that. It's about engaging with the likelihood that things will continue to change and evolve and charting a path, which is slightly different. And I think, you know, one of the first things you can do if you're looking for something to do kind of right now with your team to start this journey, one of the first things you can do is just to be curious about what's changing. So, you know, get everyone in the team to go away and think about one big thing that they think is changing in your environment that might be significant, and then come back together and have a conversation about the interplay of those things. There's a great place to start on your kind of curious journey and really engage everyone, because I think the danger sometimes also with kind of strategic planning is that it sits within a very small cohort within the organization or within the team, and it feels disconnected from everyone else. And I think now we're also very aware, aren't we, of what the experience that we've just been through and the how quickly something can become a huge global issue. So I think we're all much more keyed in than we were previously to that strategic planning piece. And so it's a good time to engage people in the team and take the pressure off yourself, you know, let others be part of it as well.
Agree. And use the collective brain power in the room.
Mm, yep.
And I love that. Just sitting there as a very start going, what's changed? What's happened? Mm-hmm. And allowing everyone to share what they are seeing, feeling, thinking, doing, experiencing before we even start to mine the data. So I think that's a really great piece of advice and a great place to start thinking about. So what has changed? And having had that conversation collectively with the brain power in the room, what would you recommend that they do next?
So I think, you know, maybe let's set this as a task. So if you're listening into this podcast, you know, here's a workshop you could go away and have today or, you know, next week once you've had a chance to gather some of these things. And so I'm just going to give you a piece of framing, which I think you could use. And then, you know, we'll talk in more detail about, you know, the book obviously has much more detail about the process that you would go through. But this is a really nice piece of framing just to start to get yourself into this headspace. So, you know, you've sent people in your team away or perhaps even broader than that to think about what's changing. Typically, when we think about the future, we think about it in the context of risk, as we were saying earlier. So there's a piece of framing that you have probably seen in your organization somewhere, which shows a sort of a 2x2 matrix of the impact of an event were it to happen, and then the likelihood of that event happening. And usually that's to talk about risks. So what's the impact of a potential risk and the likelihood of it happening? You know, as we were saying earlier, we're absolutely rubbish at predicting likelihood and predicting in general. So I'm going to suggest that we sort of chuck that matrix away and replace it with one that has impact over uncertainty. And so I want you to think about all of those things that you've got people out to gather. You know, what are the things that are changing? And capture each of those, just capture it on a post-it note, for example, and use that matrix of likelihood over uncertainty. What I'd suggest is that you replace that with a piece of framing that we use in scenario planning. And what that does is it places impact over uncertainty. So impact stays the same. What's the likely impact of this thing on a scale of high to low? You know, is it something that we really need to be worried about? Uncertainty, slightly different. So if likelihood was about saying, do I think this is likely or not, quite binary, uncertainty is about saying, what's the range of potential outcomes from this thing if it materializes? So if one of the things that you're considering is, I don't know, to do with, let's say it's climate change events, and you're very specific about what it might be because you have a product that might be impacted, for example, then you would consider what's the range of possible uncertainties from that event if it were to happen. Because what that enables you to do is to think about the difference between things where there's, you know, if it happens, it would have an impact, but you know what the impact would be, versus things where if it happens, it would have an impact and you've got absolutely no idea what it would do to your business. Because those are the things that we need to be worried about. The things that we know will have a high impact, but we have absolutely no idea how they will fall out. You know, there's 100 different possible outcomes. Those are the things that we need to concentrate on. So spend a bit of time kind of exploring that with what you've gathered. What ends up in that high impact, high uncertainty box on the top right of the 2x2? Because those are the things we need to focus our time on when we're thinking about our future plan. The other things are more or less predictable, but these are the things that are highly unpredictable and that we need to think about how we're going to address them when they materialize. So it's quite a different way of thinking about the future. So much less about a mitigation strategy and much more about a kind of trying to understand a whole range of ways that things might pan out. Because what that enables you to have is both an innovation strategy and a mitigation strategy. And also to see that sometimes innovation and mitigation are two sides of the same coin, at least.
What I really like about that as well is that you could also use that to understand what data sources are understanding you don't know.
Absolutely.
So yeah. That almost becomes the data gaps that need to be addressed for you to analyse and move forward and use that as part of your situation analysis.
That is exactly right. The Donald Rumsfeld, isn't it? You know, what are the unknown unknowns? The things that we don't know that we don't know. And they're the things that are going to trip us up. So they're the ones that we need to really explore.
Eleanor, thank you so much for your time on the podcast so far. We've talked about the behaviours we need to possess. We need to talk about the mindset and the energy levels, but we've also talked about how we look at the level of innovation versus risk. We always finish our podcast with the following question. Mm-hmm. What one piece of advice would you give to marketers of tomorrow?
I mean, wow, I think a great question. Here's my sort of soapbox moment. You know, we're at a really critical global moment where at the same time as we're facing into just an incredibly difficult challenge of addressing climate change, we also have a complete trust meltdown around the world, as those of you that, you know, keep up to date with the Edelman Barometer will be well aware, and actually anyone who just watches the news will be well aware. We also have a massive crisis of inequality globally. So we're facing into three really difficult things, which, you know, might feel like they have got nothing to do with your job as a marketer or a marketing leader, but actually have everything to do with it. Mm. And actually, you're in a unique position in your organization in that marketers sort of sit on the edge of the business. So they're able to interpret external and internal signals. And that's a really kind of powerful place to be. So, you know, advice would be fight for your place at the table, fight for the voice that you have, recognize the value that your edge perspective can bring, and really be prepared to challenge. There's a great, great example in former White House team, so Barack Obama's White House team, of, you know, how we can amplify each other's voices, which is, I think, is really, really important at this point and for you as a sort of community of marketers. If you are in a room and someone says something that is important, but it is not heard, say it again and credit that person. Let's make sure now that our voices are being heard on the things that matter, because we really do have a very short period of time now to address some very stark and significant global issues. So, you know, if you're sitting in a conversation about building strategy and that strategy does not take account of climate change or the global trust crisis or inequality, then you need to be shouting out on behalf of those issues. Because a strategy that doesn't take account of any of those things, first of all, it sort of flies in the face of the purpose, I think, that we all are rooted in, or the values that most of us are rooted in. But also it's a strategy that's very vulnerable, I would argue, to some of the shocks that will emerge around those issues. So really, really important. Fight for your voice, back each other up, and be confident that you have a really powerful view to give on this stuff, and that your voice really matters.
Thank you so much for that empowering piece of advice. And thank you again for your time on the podcast.
Pleasure, Abby. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Whole Marketeer podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please do click follow below for more weekly podcasts. The Whole Marketeer book is now available in all good bookstores. And to find out more about how Labyrinth can support and step change the growth of your brand or agency, go to www.labyrinthmarketing.co.uk.